Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
And now I have the honor of introducing Magdalena Weinstein. She is a somatic experiencing practitioner, as well as coach, a crisis counselor, and a brain-based, as well as movement educator. With that, I warmly welcome Magdalena Weinstein. Welcome.
Thank you, Sam. Welcome, everybody. I'm very excited to be here. Hi, there I am. And I want to start before I launch into some visuals, because I want to make this not only an auditory experience where you see me, but I want you to have the experience of seeing also some of the symbols, some of the adding more meaning to this, adding more richness. And so visual input does that. Before that, I wanna find out in a scale from 0 to 10, and it could be horizontal. And see, now I'm gonna start orienting you in different ways. Could be an horizontal scale from 0 to 10 of disembodied to embodied. Also, it could be from bottom to top, disembodied to embodied, 0 to 10. It could be also a circle and a spheric, like maybe the bottom of the sphere is more like disembodied and the top of the sphere is embodied. From 0 to 10, where are you in the scale? And you can put that in the chat. Also, you can put the number and where you're coming from, kind of to orient all of us to the experience we're having. Good, and so we're gonna be seeing each other's, and you can put like the number and maybe where you are in the world. So that's also kind of interesting to see, seeing numbers. Yeah, thanks for, yeah, take your time. Take your time for finding again. So it's orienting into from disembodied to embodied. 0 is disembodiment, 10 is embodied. And what does it mean? So this is gonna be a talk about a liberation. It's not about oppression, actually, it's about liberation. So the oppression was like the, come on, come here, listen to me. And then the liberation is actually the lead where we're heading. So yeah, number and location in the world. Yeah, thank you. So some of you are embodied, some of you feel a little bit below. And is that okay? That's another question that you can, after you put the number there, is that okay wherever you are? Is that okay if you're in a high number, in a lower number? One, maybe ask yourself, is that okay with me? Not okay. Okay, some people are okay with that. Yes, hi, Cassie. I see a lot of faces in the message, in the chat. Uh-huh. Some people are saying not okay, okay. Mm-hmm. You can kind of look at the chat to experience our field, you know, because it's actually liberation is a collective experience eventually. So we all want to experience this collective liberation, and it can be challenging. Right. Thank you for sharing all those numbers. It's very useful just to experience the field here, and you can go back to them later. So welcome all of you coming in. When you see numbers, it means 0 is disembodiment and 10 is embodiment. And notice again how I wasn't only mentioning a scale that was horizontal, but I was suggesting also maybe vertical or spheric. A spheric, Stephen Hoskinson was arising into this spheric orientation. So with that, I want to share my screen. And before that, I just want to mention one thing that I didn't say in the bio is that I actually come from Chile. And so you will see some of the thread of my growing up in Chile into the sharing that I'm doing today. So I'm going to share the screen. You can still continue sharing your numbers or maybe feeling into the okayness or not okayness about embodiment. And we're going to kind of dive into what does that mean? So I would say 100% that embodiment is our birthright. It might sound corny, but I say definitely 100% that is the truth. And the question here is not if it's the birthright or not. The question is why, how, and what made us lose touch with ourselves and our body? I think that's the real question. And I think that's the real thirst that brings people together in things like this big conference, that questioning about what happened? Why are we not embodied anymore? And why do we have to look for that somewhere other than ourselves? Okay. So here is some image that I wanted to share. It took me a while to find the right image, but it lands really well with my history for a couple of reasons. One of them is that this indigenous group of people that you see here, the man on the side is French, but the group is from Patagonia, the south of Chile. And this group was named Selknam. I say was because I think most of them actually are gone. And most of the indigenous people, well, maybe there's one left, but most of them actually disappeared over years. And you see the date here is 1889. So a little more than 100 years ago, 150 maybe. So it's very fast, the process of disembodiment, how it happened. And what I see here, and I know a lot about this photo because I did my thesis around these indigenous people. When I was finishing my dissertation in design, I decided to study the indigenous people of the south of this Patagonia area. And there were four tribes. And this is one of the land tribes, the Selknam. Many things horrible happened to them, but this is a very distinguishable one. And I'm gonna move fast from this, but I want you to land here because this is the subject that I wanted to talk about. And this is why, the why is here, the what is here, everything is in this photo. It is an image of a moment in time when Darwin went to Chile and explored this area and decided that these were the missing link, went back to Europe, and in France, they started to talk about this. In England, they started to talk about this. And when French and the Dutch came, some of the people that came decided to bring some of the indigenous people to Europe to show the missing link. And I'm thinking about the missing link. When I was studying this, I was thinking like, what is this missing link that Darwin is talking about? But when you think about Europe and how far Europe was at the point in time from embodiment, you can think about how this tribe and the European mentality are so far from each other at that point in time, because Europe had moved away from embodiment thousands of years. Thousands of years. I'm being very honest about this, and if you can explore that in yourself. So when Darwin goes to the south of Chile and sees actually people that are living connected with the land, connected with each other, their tribe is a very collaborative, collective experience. They're turning everything around, the cycles of the earth, the cycles of their body. They're very embodied. They're using tools, but they're really using their body as a tool. When Darwin goes there and when all the Europeans go there, they're disoriented. And this is kind of like one of the processes that I feel happens in the European collective. It's a disorientation because this is new, because it hasn't been around for thousands of years, so at least 1,000 years. And so because it hasn't been around, it's disorienting. And that is threat. That's a threat, but not for any random reason. So I'm going to just kind of continue for a second into this image. And so these people went to Europe, were forced to go to Europe, and were used in an exhibition in I can't remember the name of this specific gigantic exhibition that is done in Paris. So they were exhibited as the creatures of the wilderness. And I'm thinking, wow, this is an exhibition of embodiment, right? But it's away, it's separated from the Europeans. And then it was very hard to, it was very hard for the indigenous people because they never had seen disembodied people before and having an experience of an urban life and suddenly also having to stay there and then return back to home. And that was extremely disorienting for them as well. So it brought them also into disembodiment. And so the death of all these people is caused by this first disorientation of the European that caused the oppression of these people and that caused also the disorientation and then therefore like the decay of these tribes and the death of them, the disappearance. So I'm going to move on from here because I want to approach this subject from a physiological perspective. And Peter Levine always talks so well about this stuff. And so he's talking about, think about the first European, the trauma is a straitjacket created when a devastating moment freezes in time. So something must have happened, right, to Europeans. So many times, straitjacket frozen in times that continues stifling the unfolding of the being and separates us, moves us away from our attempt to continue, carry on with our lives, which was embodied. So disconnects us from ourselves, disconnects us from others, and that we can see the disconnection from nature, like these people were disconnected from the body, disconnected from spirit, like Levine talks about. And this is important. The traumatic symptoms are not caused specifically by the event. So because we can't find one event that caused the trauma to the European or to the indigenous, the trauma arises when the energy residual from the experience is not discharged. And so this straitjacket continues being there. The energy is not discharged. And so it remains trapped in the nervous system where it can wreak havoc, right? So it starts creating this orientation and imbalance in the system, in the physiology, which carries on over centuries, thousands of years to where we're now. We're looking back to experiences that can actually discharge this energy so that we can reorient into embodiment back. Right? So, and I don't know, some of you have seen this pyramid. I'm going to go fast through it, but you can see how this pyramid of trauma was a study that ACE did over 2 years with 17,000 people. And you can see the study actually starts at the adverse childhood experiences, but it has been added social conditions and generational embodiment trauma. So when you move from bottom to top, you can see how one issue carries on to the next. So trauma in generations causes social conditions to be complex, which causes adverse childhood experience, which causes disrupted development, which causes social, cognitive, and emotional impairment, and then goes on and until early death. That's what the study says, but I think it's this is also a way of seeing in general. If you put early death like embodiment, it's just like really detrimented and shortened the span of that possibility as well. So what's a healthy or a nervous system that has this rhythm, a rhythm that is able to take you into mobilization, sympathetic nervous system energy in the physiology is the capacity to go for a walk, go for a run, do exercise if you need, do dancing, just be active, wash dishes, whatever is necessary to do in the moment. It's activated, it's aroused, a little bit aroused when you get excited. Right now, I'm using sympathetic energy to talk and move my hands. And then there is, in the healthier nervous system physiology, there is a settling going down into parasympathetic, in the rest, into the digestive, into the eating, perhaps in meditation, into the contemplation, looking at maybe the landscape or sitting in your door and looking outside or looking through your window. Also the sleep time when you're connecting with somebody and you both are quiet, just looking at each other, when you have a baby in your arms, and nursing, all these experiences when you're with the pet and you're just petting the pet, the parasympathetic. So that's nice normal range, but when we get into the unsettled nervous system, is exactly what we're talking about. There's this nice sailing into the activation and deactivation is disrupted, right? By the, it doesn't matter what event did it. What matters is now the disruption. So the disruption causes now a hyper sympathetic, hyper aroused, too much energy that can cause sense of overwhelm or panic or anxiety, right? So racing heart, racing thoughts. And when you get to a hyper aroused state, it's also gonna eventually, inevitably, take you into a hypoarouse, into a, if the wave goes really high, it's gonna crash down fast, like a pendulum. If you have a pendulum and it's moving slowly, and if you push it a little bit, you give it a little push, it's gonna go faster, because what's trying to do is settling eventually back into its normal range. But in the system, in our system, the pendulum is not able to rest into a more smaller range, into a settler range. So and this is when we get into chronic pain, in fibromyalgia, and there's so much, I mean, here in this space in between the hyper and the hypoarouse. Many of the conditions, the chronic conditions, syndromes, we call them in somatic experiencing, are experienced right in between this hyper and hypo, unregulated, unable to settle place. And this is back to the pyramid that we're talking about. So this is because we already have a intergenerational trauma or social conditions that are causing it, that are creating disrupted development in the child. So from here, I really want to take you to some interesting approach to oppression, into like some flower petal. But before that, I want to just say that the cortical brain's default mode is orienting to threats. Already it's going in that direction, no matter what. So that's this is the default of the cortex. And so it needs to feel safe in order to help the physiology back into homeostasis, help the heart rate to change, help the breathing to slow down. We call this the break in the system that is caused by ventral, if you know polyvagal theory, but we're not gonna go there because it's too much time for that. But it's just like causing a break in the system. If you were hyper aroused, breaking the system to just like calm down, calming the heart, coming into, getting more into the gut digestion and relaxing. So if we cannot go back to that homeostasis that takes care of this going into sympathetic activated and then resting, if we don't, due to trauma, we continue moving beyond our flow into this big pendulum. And that's when our window of tolerance is cracked and we become disoriented, because we can't settle back into our normal smaller range. And this orientation is what happens in the cortex. It creates threat. I'm not sure I'm safe here. I don't feel safe. And the cortex is saying I'm not safe because it's sensing disorientation, is sensing threat. But actually the threat is not coming from the environment. When the Europeans go to see the indigenous people, there's nothing wrong with the indigenous people, but the Europeans see threat, right? So we see enemies, enemies in whatever is unfamiliar. I don't understand you. Therefore, you must be something wrong. And so we decide to bring everybody and everything to a familiar place, because the unfamiliar is unsettling. And this unsettling, I just want to go back, it's because of the an inability to bring ourselves back to homeostasis, because we're disembodied, we're dissociated, we're not capable of coming back to ourselves. And so for that, we press down, we suppress those differences. So oppression is born out of this trauma, of the unsettling of the system, and oppression also creates new traumas, of course, right? So let's go into one of my favorite flowers right now that I recently created around disembodiment. You can just kind of like start sensing in yourself this. The oppression creates many, many issues in the system, but some of the interesting, important ones, and I will go from one side to the other, is developmental delay. I already talked about that. So oppression is making the child, the brain, less developed. So the sequence in which a safe, again, we're talking about the cortex. The cortex needs to feel safe. So if it's not feeling safe, the brainstem, the midbrain, the higher brain zones are not connected in the right mixture that takes from prenatal times until at least 18 or 25 years old. All the time we're developing. So there is this incongruency in the development, which causes dispersity, susceptibility, permeability to the external world. Now I'm starting to feel the threat. The threat, this permeability and susceptibility, is causing this disorientation that causes incoherence in the system. Self-submission, because of that incoherence, could be one of the ways. And we're gonna go into the opposition on the other side. Shame, I don't understand this, the environment where I am. It must be me, it must be something wrong in me. And then we were talking about before, I was thinking about these Europeans wanting to make the indigenous people all the same, because they were disoriented with the unfamiliarity. And so the way to create familiarity is to create uniformity. You can see how that was fitted all over South America, all over, everywhere where they went. They tried to create uniformity. They dressed them, they gave them a religion, they gave them a system. Now you need to think the way we think. We're gonna give you our language. Now we all use the colonialist language, English, Spanish. So we give them the language, we give them the uniform, the dress code, the religion, the God that we believe, and we make them all the same, which is not easy, which is not gonna be accepted easily, which creates antagonism, opposition, isolation. I don't wanna be like you, I'm different. So, and that creates the sense of obligation, of disgust. And we saw it in the indigenous population, lots of addiction. And not only there, here we are. So we're those people. We're the same Selknam that I'm showing in the photo that went to this exhibition in France. We are addicted now. We have been experiencing this oppression flower. Okay, so that's the bad news. That's the terrible news. So, but from here, let's move on to the embodiment process. So from that place of oppression, there is also a route to bring embodiment back that has to do with liberation, with that. Perhaps it's the opposite. I feel like it's almost like the shadow or the mirror on the other side of the flower, where neural development is sequential. It's again, organized. And which means there is a lot more agency and boundaries. And that's something that we happen to experience early in life, when we start to say no, when with the terrible twos they call it, but I'm saying like, is the boundary and agency time when we start saying what we need, what we want. This is, I'm approaching this from a development, but you can think about it like right now. How about right now, your agency and your boundaries, because of neurodevelopment, they weren't fully online, and right now they're not online. So you can start sensing, well, if I don't have enough boundaries and enough agency, I probably don't feel safe embodied. I probably don't feel fully safe, fully here until I have them. Because boundaries and agency create a self-sovereignty that we all crave. Body love, self-body love, coherence. When I love myself, I feel much more coherence, right? Because whatever I do makes sense, because there is self-love for any part of that. So there is not that shame. And this is an evolving process. I'm not saying let's go from oppression to self-sovereignty suddenly. It's a process, but I'm offering some of the, you know, like the cascade of things that could be experienced because of that. This coherence and this self-love allows me to feel differentiation, which to me is primordial. So because in the individual level, if I am not able to differentiate myself from you, so if I was that French person looking at these indigenous people, if I don't have all the other elements in me, self-love, sovereignty, coherence, boundaries, agency, and all the development, I'm not capable of seeing you as different and be okay and feel safe around you being different than me. So this is at the individual level. And if I don't feel safe around you being different, I am not gonna connect with you. And I'm not gonna feel intimate with you. I am not gonna do that. And this carries to the end one part of the flower to me, that most important piece. It's like, if all these pieces are here, I am able to now feel healthy pleasure, which is the opposite of addiction. And it has to do with embodiment. It has to do with what is beneficial, what is digestible, what is nutritious for me. And this has to do a lot with the organs below the head. And now, because I've been talking about the cortex doesn't feel safe, now I'm talking about organs below the head are starting to feel the space for pleasure. Oh, now I can discriminate in between what's good and what isn't for me, for my body. So now I'm embodied in myself, and I'm able to have desire up, have my will, and I can continue developing around my will, okay? And this is one piece of the point, because when you look at it, the actually liberation, it has to be, I feel, it has to be first individual because of the neurodevelopment and because of the boundaries and agency, but then it needs to expand to a collective and to a cultural level to really make a change in the system. Right, we're trying to move on from A to Z. So I created a flower that's, to me, not yet even, I can't even fathom this flower yet, but this is a like a glimpse of an idea of societies in the future if we continue moving in the direction of individual liberation with the terms that I was talking about, with, I would say, definitely with boundaries and agency at the beginning. But now we're looking in the development, we're seeing cooperative emergent societies that are, so just like the neurodevelopment is happening in the individual system, now the society is developing. If you look at society from the point of view of like a physiology or something, the society has to grow, has to develop. It's also, the development of the society as a collective cooperative is being delayed. So, and we don't know where it's going. We don't know which direction. Just like when we're developing as an embryo towards the human, we don't know which direction we're taking as we develop. We don't know at 5 that at 7 we will do that. We don't know at 6 months that we will be walking at 9 months or at 12 months or whatever. We don't know that we will be writing thesis when we're 30 or whichever. We don't see that yet because we are evolving. Same thing, I feel like the collective liberation, we can't tell yet because it's not there yet. But one of the, like when we're following this line that I was like this kind of like spiral circular motion, We see how bottom up and horizontal consensus could happen. Also, I could ask at maybe like spiral consensus or circular or 3D or whatever, 360 ideas of consensus happening all over the place. Could be diagonal consensus. So you start getting into kind of like all the possible motions of consensus that we're not even close as society, as collective yet. Emergent sovereignty. I had to use the word emergent because sovereignty right now means monarchy or dictatorship. So it doesn't mean anything collective yet. Collective, coherent field. We have no idea. We're starting to explore it. People like Joe Dispenza is talking a little bit about the, and here and there, there's people talking, but the way they're talking about it is not always embodied, and that's concerning to me because we can create a coherent field collective if it's not based on embodiment, because it will be based on disembodiment, and we're back to the bottom of oppression when we're going back to disembodiment. So decentralization, diversity, inclusion, equity, we're not there yet. We're trying to create organizations that are based on that, but we're not there yet. Collective trust, those diversity, inclusion, equity, and all that creates distrust, that collective trust. I trust you, I trust the group, I trust everybody because we're so solidary, because we have mutuality, we are interested in each other. We are not there yet, but I'm just kind of like teasing you into that direction. When you do, so embodiment is not an individual process. It needs to have something with a direction where you're going. So a direction I feel has to be towards this a coherent field, towards this emergent, we all govern each other. And from there, we're back into, again, healthy pressure. So societies that are not addicted, that our birthright is whatever we desire on our will. How's that? It's so complex. We can't even fathom how to get there. So, okay, these are the dreams. These are like the visuals. And when we get to the real thing, the real meat here, like, okay, well, how are we gonna do that? Because this is a whole lot of a talk, but then what are we applying here? And concepts are so complex because when I work individually with people, I'm looking, or even in groups, I'm looking at the contraction and the expansion of the life force. I'm also looking at how much discharge is happening or not in the system and some of the processes. And I wanted to show in this briefly graph about the importance of grief in the process and the importance of healthy aggression in another side of the process. It's almost like there's two parts of this process that need to be liberated. And grief is very complex because it's actually a physiological response. It's not a mental capacity. So, but there's different levels of grief, and there's definitely mental grief when we're thinking about something and we get sad. But I'm talking about the grief that has to do with accountability, with physiological waves of understanding there's something really wrong here, and I want to change it from the oppressor and from the oppressed. Both of them need to become accountable about, okay, the perspective, the society is not working. If we don't touch ever into the grief in the embodiment process, if we're trying to move away from the physiological grief, we're only touching into the fight, flight responses, very scared of the very subtle waves of dorsal, or some people call it shut down, but I would say grief is not shut down, but it's a wave that comes from bottom upwards, and we're not touching that. We are not also going to create the systemic change because there is so much accountability, so much life force in the grief. And I'm going to show in a different graph same thing, because I want to get you something to bring into the surface. So it's okay that you're feeling that physiological response. Now the issue here is feeling shame or nausea around it, which is like the contraction part of it. When we feel that contraction, we usually dissociate. So as soon as we feel that disgust, we probably tap into that nausea, we probably tap into the shame, and it creates a contraction away from that grief that is actually the place where we can start getting the idea, well, I want change. I actually want change. And that happens further. The grief actually activates this healthy capacity to mobilization, this healthy, well, we call it in somatic experiencing aggression, actually. So a capacity to actually do something about this. So if I'm gonna move into my boundaries, I actually have to be able to respond to the environment with my movement, my aggressive capacity, which is gonna create more of that capacity to socially engage. Once I have more of this, I'm able to, if I need to say no to you or something like that, I am able to connect with you now because I feel safe enough that we're gonna be able to dialogue, and that creates systemic change. And I wanna switch to this one. So to understand, grief is really right into the life force and the vitality, the potentiality, when we're talking about emergent societies, emergent collective, emergent liberation, emergent sovereignty, we are talking about life force, because the whatever development we haven't created yet, whatever neural adjustments that we haven't experienced are gonna be experienced from our life force. So grief is juicy. But notice in the graph, there is the withdrawal loop. I don't want to go there. Or the blaming loop. Well, it's somebody else's fault. I don't want to go. There's somebody else's fault. Or the route of appeasing. Oh, I'm going to just say yes to whatever. I'm just going to continue in that direction. So we need to come out of the shutdown. We need to come out of the shame collapse and bring ourselves closer and closer again to the boundaries, to healthy anger, to the orienting towards the pleasure and the will and the connection in the ventral vagal activation. So social engagement, the connection with pleasure is not just orienting in the environment to what we like about the environment. That is just one piece. The other piece is orienting to what I don't want. Because as much as I want to orient to what I want, I require orientation to what I don't want, to know, to discriminate what is good and what isn't right, what is right and what isn't right for me. Okay, so I can stay a little bit longer in this piece of the graph, but if you have questions around the how do we even get away from the fun and a piece, or how do I start experiencing boundaries, or what's healthy anger, I really encourage you to start bringing that forward. So of course you're gonna wanna regulate the nervous system. It's not like I'm not throwing into, like, let's go into grief without any regulation. We wanna have a lot of regulation while we're going into an experience that can feel dysregulating, like feeling some of that healthy aggression that could bring us into a hyper, like into rage, into what has been happening, you know, in the riots. So I wanna bring that healthy aggression so that doesn't become the riot, it becomes a change, a mobilization enough for change, systemic change, or into the grief where there is actually the capacity of the government, organization, collective group, or whatever it is, even personally in interpersonal relationships, where I'm capable of admitting when I am wrong, when the other person, when I hurt somebody, etc. So I wanna bring the regulation structures, I wanna bring those capacities. And so babies first require external regulation, external input. They don't know there's differentiation in between them and others. They only know themselves. This is all there is. And so they require this swaddling or contact, the warmth, the boob, all of that is very important to regulate breathing, heart rate, temperature. This is a time when the ventral capacities come online. Slowly first, just like getting into that sensation, the warmth, the milk, and the connection skin to skin. And then in co-regulation, when I'm a little older, I start noticing, oh, there's two of me, there's that person and me, and I feel so much emotion, and they are helping me regulate. And I would say we're still in that, in this process of learning how to regulate, because we have so much delay in the regulation. So as babies, we are already have trauma in the external regulation. Then in co-regulation, we have trauma, because from that 1 or 2 years old till 5, we maybe didn't have safe co-regulation. And then after that self-regulation happens, after 6, if co and external regulation were there. So we're still evolving in that direction. Individually and collectively, we still are evolving. So I was just, I created this circle graph a while back where I was showing possible directions for all these three directions of regulation, because they're so important in your process of liberation, in your development. So don't minimize regulation. Regulation creates the development that creates your capacity for boundaries. If you are more regulated, you're able to exercise that healthy aggression or tap into that deep grief, more able to step out of them and feel settled afterwards, after this intense, because it can feel very intense to feel boundaries when you never had them. So as you can see, there's all these opportunities, shelter or balcony car, anything outside of yourself, home, garden, nature, to orient to safety externally, co-regulation. There's this one, virtual and gatherings, cooperative, but you can have a therapist or friend, partner. And then all of these can be approached every moment that you can think about them. And self-regulation, there's so many, like breath work or exercise and rest. And I'm looking at them as a big picture. I don't want to offer you one route, because there's so many levels. And I don't know, because I don't know you individually. Everybody needs, so maybe somebody needs heat and cold immersion. Somebody needs more sleep or tapping into more focus or self-touch, definitely exercise and contemplative practices. And positive interoception practices where I can feel safe inside myself. But if that's not working, self-regulation is not working, I can always go to co or external regulation. If you know one route is not working, I can always go to a different route. So if I'm not able to do a breathing practice and I feel frustrated around that, well, I can always go for a walk, right? If I can't go for a walk, then well, I can come back and maybe watch something virtual that feels like co-regulation for me. I can orient in my bedroom. So I don't want to, before we go to questions, I don't want to leave you with only answers, because how are we going to create something new if I give you all the answers? That's oppressive. So back to yourself. How do you experience liberation? Is a good, maybe journaling possibility. Do you see liberation? Do you feel liberation? Do you sense liberation? I'm looking at all the channels that we use in somatic experiencing. How do you embody liberation? Is embodiment part or whole of the liberation? Because for depends, we might have opinions that are different. You know, maybe you could be answering this question when we finish here. So what is a pleasurable step towards your embodiment journey, towards your liberation journey? That's another good question. All these questions, maybe you can get a screenshot of this. I hope you got a screenshot of all the other graphs as well, kind of like digest them more. And I wanna get out of the share. So, yeah. So when you think about those questions I also want to say that embodiment is in between the higher brain or the cortex brain and the midbrain and the brainstem and the gut and the enteric nervous system. And I feel personally very deeply that the liberation for us is moving into a lower brain zone where we can discriminate liver, kidney, gut, pelvic area, where we can start discriminating and digesting, because that's where we experience the world. From our lower areas is where we drink water. We don't drink water in our higher brain. We drink water down. We eat food this way. So that's a direction that I highly recommend, but it's not so simple because we haven't been used to that direction. But I want to take you into maybe a interest in that direction more often. Like, how do I experience the world below the brainstem and the midbrain and the cortex, into the parts of you that digest the world and that actually grow? Organs like the liver is a growing organ. So that's, to me, very exciting. So enteric nervous system, the whole thing is a whole conference, perhaps, of the evolving human. So there's a lot of potential here. I just want to leave you with excitement and potential about the explorations into the lower centers of ourselves. Yeah, so we can go back to questions if there's any, Sam.
There are questions. Folks are curious and interested. Maria asks, you talked about the different ways of regulation, but do you have any strategies when it feels really overwhelming to be with grief and you don't have that external support network for regulation? Is there anything that you can offer for that specifically?
Yeah, because grief, physiological grief, we're not raised with grief as a physiological okay response. Some of us are okay with anger response is physiologically okay, and some other emotions, but grief is definitely shut down from Western society, absolutely. So discovering a journey of discovering of physiological grief it has to be taught. So co-regulation in grief. So I'm experiencing grief, finding a therapist, finding a friend that you can share, somebody out there that can help you in the wave, like you're going through and the other person holds your hand, or if it's virtual, you can say, you know, you're okay. It's gonna pass. You're gonna feel the rise and here it is. And then it's gonna go down. So it's much better and easier to do it with somebody else or a group. It could be a grief group, you know. That's another way of doing it. Virtually is possible as well. Everybody holding space for this experience to happen.
And doesn't have to be live by yourself. Or can't be like a recording.
It could be a recording as well. That could be interesting, yeah.
Awesome.
But
thank you.
That just training ourselves to start tolerating this level of intensity, like grief, because it's a more gut, more liver, kidney. You know, you feel it there in the pelvic floor. So it's like sexual organs. It's different than a head grief. So we have to get used to a feeling of those organs. Sometimes grief is kind of watery feeling, and that can feel overwhelming, just the sense of water in there. Yeah.
Thank you. That's a very in-depth answer, sorry. And Lindsay also asks, could those feelings of shame and nausea as we grieve individually explain how some very like simple somatic movements can actually leave us feeling dizzy and disoriented?
Yes, the disorientation is already happening because of the what I was saying before, like the disembodiment creates disorientation. So any of that nausea is saying you're about to disorient, you're about to disembody again. You're going beyond your window. So nausea is like, okay, that's enough. You can't do more. You're beyond. So it's a great signal of beyondness. And once you start tolerating more, you have less nausea. That's what happens with nausea. But now you have to accept it and let it be your teacher. It's like the Jedi or something. It's like really a great teacher to listen, seriously. It's like the master Jedi coming. with the it's gonna slash your head. That's it. You don't go any further. So it's a great teacher to listen.
Thank you for the metaphor. I'm sure there's people that are just very happy for Star Wars to be brought in.
Yeah.
And you touched on this a little bit, but Bettina asks, what are the ways, collective ways, to heal trauma and impression? Or do we just need to do our own personal thing? How do we bring that into the larger scale?
It's possible to do both at the same time. The requirement for collective liberation or collective embodiment is individual embodiment, individual liberation. But so both can be brought together. I think they work fantastic together. Or you can do sequential, first individual and then collective. We don't have that much time, I feel. We should do both at the same time because we can't wait another like 30, 20 years. I don't think that we actually have that time personally. And if we don't move in that direction now, I don't know if we have that much time. So collective and individual at the same time. You can do it, get a group of four or five or whatever size and start doing it both together, you know?
And I mean, this is just asking you to continue that answer, but Tony asks, what role of mutual regulation, how can that play into the liberation of adults? Like what are those group sessions providing us?
So can you say more about that question before I launch into an answer?
So Tony asks, what role can mutual regulation play in the liberation of adults?
Well, it's part of the, like I was saying, like regulation of the nervous system is essential. So, and it has like three levels. So it has external, co and internal regulation. So any of those levels are part of the process of expanding our window of tolerance. It's like, it's like when you're gonna go for a run, you need to have some food or some something to drink. You need to be hydrated, you need to be healthy. These three levels are going to continue helping you in the direction of liberation. So they need to be part of your, it's like you eat food, you drink water, you need that. That's kind of like your water maybe, if that makes sense.
But how do you see this regulation culturally, if we do a cultural shift towards regulation, how do you see it changing our lived like society and culture? What improvement do you see?
It's like everything, yeah. So since it's emergent, we have no idea what it will become because I see ourselves as embryos in the development of this kind of society that I'm talking about. We're very embryo. We have no idea. One day we'll walk, the next time we'll be writing books or whatever. We can't tell what it's gonna be. I can't see it. And I don't even want to. I have the idea that it will happen and I have concepts, but I don't wanna kind of see it yet. I want it to be emerging from all of us at the same time. Is that answer kind of like, it's a complex question. It's a complex answer, yeah.
It helps us see your vision a little bit more. Thank you for the amazing talk. I love how it's through the brain, but you really connected it to the body. I have a lot of trouble with abstract mental things. So this talk specifically volunteered to be here because I wanted to hear how that all connected in the body, where it shows up. And yeah, it was incredible. We do have more questions. We do not have time for more questions here right now, but please continue the discussion with your fellow participants in our Facebook groups, in our coffee sessions through the portal. We are also going to add Magdalena's link in the chat so that you can contact them and get more information because we're here for you and we just don't have enough time right now. There is a lot of learning still left to do that we're all doing. As Magdalena said, it is emergent, which is really cool, but we need time to digest that by ourselves and share it with others. And so in the full library, there are recordings, audio, and much more that we want to share with you, this knowledge that Magdalena and so many others are offering. Please let us know if it is too expensive to purchase for you personally. Know that it is double that after the conference. And if you work professionally in trauma though, do reach out to us and contact us for more purchase details, because specifically professional folks in trauma, we want to make a deal that works for you so that you can have these resources to help the folks that you do help and reach in your own lives. As well, your contribution makes this conference live and freely available to anyone that comes, which is incredible. Anyone can be in any one of these sessions. And that's really important. As well, it's a contribution and a thank you to all who have put this on, the absolute army of people, because it's a huge event. Over 1,000 speakers, it's ridiculous. And so thank you again, Magdalena, for joining us today. Once again, her chat, her link is in the chat. And also, you have the last word. What, in your one sentence or less, Magdalena, is your top embodiment tip?
I want everybody to consider that this is emerging. It's something you don't know yet, and it's coming from your body. It's informing you every moment when you make a decision based on what is beneficial and what isn't. It's informing you always. So it's not a fixed place. It's a journey. Embodiment is a journey, ongoing and developing. So it's exciting because of that. I'm really excited that it is evolving.
Awesome. Thank you again, Magdalena. And thank you everyone that
came. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Sandy. Hello, everybody. Mark, thank you, everybody.